Hi, everyone. Welcome to season two and episode 19 of the From the Outside with Sarah C podcast. I am Sarah Crosscut, the host and creator of this podcast and the owner and facilitator of From the Outside, a series of plant and nature-based lessons that helps us to cultivate a deeper relationship to the natural world, ourselves, and each other. In addition, I'm a published environmental writer. My work has been included in several anthologies published by Plants and Poetry Journal, www.plantsandpoetry.org, and Wild Roof Journal, www.wildroofjournal.com. You can learn more and find links on my website, www.fromtheoutsidellc.com. In season two, we explore the theme, the numinous nature of nature, beginning with the elements of earth, air, fire, and water, and moving on to explore the diverse ecosystems and landscapes of our beautiful planet. I ponder the mysterious, the profound, and the sacred within the natural world of which we are an integral part. How can our purposeful and intentional connection to the elements and unique landscapes deepen our connection to nature and our authentic self? What can we learn and what wisdom can we gain when we observe mindfully and tap into the form and function of each element and ecosystem? So I encourage you to continue to listen in. So let's ponder the fire element. In fire, which is an important element in nature to maintain ecosystem health, and in volcanic activity. So let's start with fire. So fire has been used for many, many years by Native Americans, Native Alaskans, and Native Hawaiians to promote landscape health. They use it as a medicine or a prescription to promote the health of the landscape. And they use control fire as a means, well, for lots of things, but for clearing land for crops and to hunt game. So fire promotes ecological diversity, as well as some other things, which we'll talk about in a minute. But ecological biodiversity or diversity, meaning species richness, the number of different species, and species number, how many of each of these species do you have in a given area? In addition, fire helped them to manage specific species important to their livelihood and culture. These controlled burns help to reduce the risk of an uncontrolled burn. According to the National Park Service article, Indigenous Fire Practices Shape Our Land, this indigenous cultural burning is an intentional use of fire to promote the health and well-being of the land so that it may provide food, clothing, medicine, and all other cultural services needed to support the human population. These types of fires were prescriptions for the land to maintain its health and prosperity to provide abundance culturally and ecologically to the indigenous people. So depending on the location of the various tribal communities, fire was used for different reasons: to clear areas for grazing, to drive bison herds to specific areas, to encourage the growth of specific medicinal plants or plants for food, even to promote a habitat for specific birds whose feathers were used in ceremonial dress. The indigenous populations were connected to the fire element. It was medicine for their well-being and the well-being of their land. After decades of strict fire suppression policy in national parks and federal lands, of which there has been for a very long time, The importance of controlled fire in many ecosystems is now being acknowledged, and the traditional ecological knowledge of the indigenous people around cultural burning is being understood, recognized, and utilized with their help in many parts of the U.S. So here are the benefits of fire to landscapes, to certain landscapes, prairies, forests. So heat, not necessarily of all intensities, because you don't want a high intensity, uncontrolled burn. That just brings a lot of devastation and loss. But when we talk about prairies and forests, they benefit from a low intensity fire as it reduces the amount of dense vegetation that can fuel more intense fires that result in those fast burning, high heat, destructive wildfires. So prescribed burns are used as a means of landscape conservation, so to speak. And the years and years of suppressing fire as a tool has left many of our wildlands full of this kind of old fuel that is what will really burn hot when wildfires are started, either naturally or by human causes. So heat and fire also promotes diversity. It can help to sort of charge or kind of energize the land so that we have native plants come back. It can control non-native species. So it definitely promotes diversity. It can promote diversity by rejuvenating the soil and adding nutrients. So it increases the fertility of the soil. Some plant species, some species of pine, need the heat. Their seeds need to be exposed to that heat in order to germinate. So it does encourage native and rare species growth. It improves wildlife habitat. It controls diseases and insects. Things like fungus, bacteria, things like that could harm plants. It creates a more aesthetically pleasing landscape, because when you're looking across a prairie or into a forest, it doesn't seem dense. It's more open. And we as humans have a tendency to find more open spaces more aesthetically pleasing. It also improves water quality. However, in our changing climate and encroaching urbanization to many wildlands, uncontrolled wildfire is devastating and destructive to the communities affected, not just the biological communities, but human communities as well. So I must acknowledge that. So, as I said before, much of the fuel for these uncontrolled wildfires has accumulated from years of fire suppression. So also, in exploring the fire element, I pondered volcanic activity and the formation of rocks and minerals. So magma is molten rock. So we're going to go back to high school earth science here. Lava is that same molten rock once it has spilled or erupted onto the Earth's surface. Although not fire, it is fiery and hot, and also the foundation of our planet. As lava cools, it creates the topography and the landscape of our planet. It can create islands. So magma is the stuff of igneous rock. Granite, basalt, obsidian, those types of rocks. So intrusive igneous rock, we are really going back to high school earth science now, rises from deep within the earth, but it gets trapped. It never makes it extrusively to the outside of the planet. So because it's trapped below the surface of the earth, it cools slowly and its crystals become larger. So a couple of examples of intrusive igneous rock are the Painted Wall in the Black Canyon of the Gunnison National Park and Devil's Tower Monument, which are two beautiful, breathtaking examples of intrusive igneous rock formations. And Devil's Tower is an exquisite example of columnar joining, which is a particular shape that forms when a basalt flow, basalt being an igneous rock, cools quickly and forms these hexagonal cracks. So I have visited both of these places, and they are absolutely stunning, both of them. And there are others, examples of intrusive igneous rock formations, but those are the two that I immediately thought of. But in addition, volcanic ash. So once we do have an eruption, a volcanic eruption, so if we think about like Mount St. Helens, which happened back in the 1980s, volcanic ash creates extremely fertile soil, as well as new landforms where primary succession of plants can occur. Sometimes we have islands come up from eruptions in the ocean, or so those are areas that are barren, but as new things find their way to this new land, we see that primary succession of land and plants taking root and a new habitat or new area forming. So this is renewal and regeneration. The heat and fire of magma or lava creates a foundation, a solid foundation. It is what our planet is made of to our existence and helps to stabilize the internal pressure of our planet. So heat, warmth, energy in the form of geothermal energy, if you've ever been to like Yellowstone National Park, and ignition, that sort of ramping up, right, of volcanic activity. So while we're on the subject of volcanoes, let's continue our examination down this road of rocks. So let's talk about metamorphic rock. In addition to igneous rock, which forms from magma, again, if you recall from high school or science, there are two other types of rock, sedimentary and metamorphic. So sedimentary rock is formed by the accumulation and deposition of minerals and other organic matter. And these substances are deposited in layers, and then cementation occurs as the weight of those layers kind of weigh upon each other. Metamorphic rock starts out as one type of rock, and through heat and exposure to pressure and heat, and maybe even a hot slurry of mineral-rich fluids, this one type of rock is completely transformed into a new rock, which when I studied and taught earth science, I just thought that was crazy, right? I mean, think about it though, like carbon becomes a diamond under heat and pressure. So it is kind of crazy the amount of energy and power and examples of transformation that can occur through this fire element. So as I was thinking about these things, fire in general, in natural systems, and volcanic activity, and metamorphic rock, I started to think of what are some ways that I can describe the fire element? Like, what wisdom does it carry? And of course, when I think about uncontrolled wildfires, I think about terms like uncontrolled, rage, destruction, devastation. Those are the things I think of. But when I think of fire in a controlled way, I think of terms like passion, ignite, release, illuminate, warmth, energy, renewal or regeneration, transformation. These really kind of earth-moving terms that we can definitely apply to our own life. So we know that fire needs a couple of things to even burn. So we know that it needs fuel. Our fire can start with what we need to release. What's the old stuff that we can throw in there, like the dried out logs when we build a fire, right? What can really get it going? What we need to release and make it burn hotter with our passion. So as we burn through the things that we need to release, how can we continue to stoke that fire with our passion, our joy, our purpose, the things that bring us that heat and light and illuminate our life? Fire also needs oxygen to keep going, to burn. So let's think of that oxygen part as our breath, right? It needs to be tended. A lot of times when you build a campfire, what do? You get it going and then you lean down and you blow into it, right? To get it fired up. So if we use our own breath to tend that fire, we need to tend it with what we wish to ignite and use our breath as we think about fire, the fire element and what it can do for us, and use that breath to focus on what we want to ignite, what we want to illuminate, what we want to energize or transform in our own life. The fire element is just so powerful. It's powerful on our planet. It can change entire landscapes. And it's powerful when we take its wisdom and we apply it to our life. So these are the observations of the fire element that I have pondered, that I've thought about. So how do we integrate or connect to that wisdom of the fire element? And so there are three questions. And if you've listened to this podcast on a regular basis, you know that these are pretty much the three questions I ask you to ask yourself when you're doing this kind of work, right? When you're trying to take what we see in nature or an element or the wisdom of something and apply it to yourself. So the first question is, what do you notice in observing the fire element? What are the things that you think of? What are those terms? What are the ways that you're going to describe that fire element? And then what is the fire element trying to tell you? And then what significance or wisdom can it share with you to cultivate a deeper connection to nature, to yourself, and to others? What is it trying to show you? Is it trying to show you transformation, regeneration, energy? How can you take what it is showing you and apply it deeper into your own self? Well, as always, I always leave you with a practice, a simple practice. And you will need a writing utensil and a journal to write down your observations and feelings of your experience. Some of you might like to use voice memos and talking to your phone. But the important thing here is that you record your experience. When you do this work, it's really important to kind of observe, reflect, record. So the goal is to make contact with the earth and her elements. So we've talked about earth, air, this is fire. So next month we'll talk about water. So connect with those elements specifically. So how do we start to connect with the fire element? Well, find a spot outdoors, try to make contact 10 to 20 minutes daily, be intentional and purposeful in your contact. So honor your time with a deep breath, a chant, set your intention when you begin and when you end your time. Connect with your whole body. How does your skin feel? What do you smell? Do you see movement in the air? What do you hear? So you're going to connect with that whole body and that breath. Remember, breath is really important with fire. And be sure and reflect on and journal or somehow record your observations and experiences. So I'm going to leave you with two activities today. So the first one, really anybody can do, connect with the heat and warmth of the sun. We didn't really talk about the sun today, but here's where I'm going to talk about it. Here's where I'm going to bring it up. So the sun, that fiery ball in the sky, right? You're going to sit in a comfortable position and close your eyes. So obviously this is going to have to be done on a sunny day. Find a spot where you can get comfy. You can sit, you can lie down. But I want you to feel it on your body. I want you to purposefully breathe in its light, breathe in its energy, and imagine it circulating through your body to each of your cells, igniting them, lighting them up. And I want you to try this activity during different times of the day. So try it when the sun is first coming up at sunrise. Try it when the sun is going down at sunset. And then try it maybe one day midday when the sun is a little bit higher overhead and has a little bit more energy. And I want you to reflect on and record your experiences during these different periods that you connect with the sun. So how did your physical body feel connecting to the fire of the sun? And what emotions or feelings come up in your emotional body while you are connecting with the sun? Activity two, you will need a fire pit or a campfire ring for this activity. In the dark, build and sit by the fire. And I want you to think about something that you would like to release. Write it on a piece of paper and relinquish it to the fire element. Go ahead and throw it in the fire. Do it with intention. Do it with purpose. And then use your breath to fuel the fire of a desired passion. Reflect and record on your experience, considering the following questions. What do you see, hear, smell, and feel with your body as it engages with fire? What did you release that no longer serves you? And what passion would you like to see ignited in its place? How can you use what you released as the first step in transformation? So remember, the things in general that we're trying to answer when we're connecting with the elements or in nature, with nature in general, is what do you notice? What is it telling you? And what is the significance or the wisdom to you? How can you apply it to your life? I encourage you to share your experiences in cultivating your purposeful and intentional relationship with nature. I would love to hear how your practice is progressing. My email is fromtheoutsidellc@gmail.com. So please feel free to reach out. I want to remind you of my free monthly webinars, which is an interactive workshop that follow the same theme as the podcast. And they are the third Wednesday of the month at 2 p.m. or 7 p.m. Eastern Time. They're free 45-minute webinars. The next one is Connecting with the Water Element, which is Wednesday, April 17th, and you can register on my website, which is www.fromtheoutsidellc.com. Just click webinars on the menu bar and it should pop up and you can register. And a Zoom link will follow. Well, thank you so much for listening. I encourage you to venture out to your backyard, a local park, a green space where you work and spend a few minutes purposefully and intentionally connecting with nature. Use your whole body, really integrate into your being what you see, smell, hear, and feel. Spend time with those you love or sit in silence, solitude, and stillness. They are important states of being in nurturing our nature connections. Acknowledge nature's wisdom and role in your life. Nature shows us how beautiful and transformative growth can be. Remember, we are all connected to the source of life and each other. With that said, you can connect with me through my website, www.fromtheoutsidellc.com, or on Instagram at sarahc_outside. Links to podcast, website, publications, webinars, community events, and all the things can be found there. Latest publications, details on workshops. I do lots of workshops that are available for educational settings, professional development, recovery programs, conferences, or other groups. And as always, please feel free to reach out. Until next time, take care.